Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And welcome again to Antrim this Christmas season. Welcome to those who are joining us online or who will be here just a little bit while later at 11 o'clock today. We are going to talk about the state of your heart this morning, the state of our hearts. And here at the outset, I want to say appreciate the work our musicians put in week after week. We've been listening to Carol the Bells at the house. I love that song, and I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've heard it played by bells. So that was terrific this morning. We're going to talk about the state of our hearts this morning, the tendency that we have to try to perform before God, to rely on our own effort, and how Christmas is about the appearance of the one who makes even the wise men, even the elites of this world, bow, fall on their knees in worship of another. We're in John 1, verses 16 through 18. Mentioned last week that John's prologue has at least elements of a chiasm to it, and so we're going to work at the outer edges and build up to Christmas Sunday and Christmas Eve at the peak of the passage in the middle. John 1, 16 and 18, the tail end of the opening this morning. We're going to hear about the fullness of grace. Last week, it was the fullness of God in human flesh. This week, the fullness of grace. And in that fullness of grace, we are going to see something about working, dreaming, resting, and seeing. Out of John 1, 16 through 18. Working, dreaming, resting, seeing. John says, "From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side or who is in the bosom of the Father, has made him known." The word of the Lord. First, working. Now, by work, I do not necessarily mean what you do for a living. I don't necessarily mean your job, though the type of work I am going to talk about could manifest itself in your life at your job. But by work, what I primarily mean is this tendency of our hearts to try to be good enough before God. The tendency of our hearts to try to earn something from God, to try to perform spiritually. And I mentioned that kind of working this morning. I mentioned that kind of working in a message on grace, a passage on grace. I mentioned work for two reasons. The first is, inasmuch as grace is unearned favor, an unmerited gift, inasmuch as that is what grace is, well then, it is all grace. Everything is grace. When we set out this contrast between the law through Moses and Christ, sometimes we almost give the impression like there was no grace beforehand. But even when the Old Covenant believers, when the Old Covenant community of faith, even when they brought their tithes, when they obeyed the law, even that was grace. There was grace even in that. He causes his sun to shine on the righteous and the unrighteous. It's all by grace. The fact that they had anything to give from in the first place, that's grace. The fact that they were even aware of God's standard, God's law, there was grace in that. So I mentioned working in a message on grace to help us remember that it is all by grace. Even when we rely on our own strength, that very strength is a gift from God. The second reason why I mention works in a passage on grace is because that is what you and I are going to be tempted to rely on instead of Christ's grace. We are going to be tempted to rely on a system of performance instead of what he has done for us. Now, we of course don't use the same terminology as the law of Moses. And John says, "For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." We don't use those same terms, the law of Moses, but I would almost take for granted that even those of us who know Christ, who believe in him, who say we've been following him for years, we still have parts of our heart where we're trying to rely on what we do for him. One way that you can recognize that is if, inasmuch as you try to rely on your own efforts, You know one way that shows up in your own life? Continued irritability with people who get in the way of what you are trying to do, right? You're trying to accomplish something. Somebody else is an obstacle to that. When your response is irritability, and I'm speaking from experience, when our response is to get annoyed, it's because we are relying on what we do. That's one way you can recognize it. Another way you can recognize relying on works is this. When something goes wrong, when something in your life goes dreadfully wrong, and the thought comes to your mind, maybe you say it, maybe you just think it, or maybe even it comes and you do your best to suppress it right away, but nonetheless it is still there. When something goes wrong and you think, God, what have I done to deserve this? The minute you say that, the minute your heart goes there, you know I still have a tendency. My default is to think that what I get from God is dependent upon what I do for him, performance. You're relying on works. What have I done to deserve this? We're relying on works. Now, when that's true, a third thing that will happen is there will be accusations in your heart, accusations in your own mind. There will be accusations because whenever you try to rely on measuring up to some standard, somewhere deep down you will know you're not doing it. You're not doing a good enough job. You're not actually measuring up. Accusations might come from the outside, an enemy, an external enemy. So accusations might come from the inside, just your own conscience. But whether it's yourself or whether it's Satan's power, either way, the voice will come, you're not doing it well enough. You're not doing it good enough. And even if you try to suppress that consciously, you know where that voice will rise to the surface? In your dreams. In your dreams. You're dreaming. And we saw in the video a reference to dreaming. Very often we approach dreams wondering whether they are going to tell us the future. Far more often our dreams are our subconscious's way of communicating with us. Most of the things, the people, the parts in our dreams are representations of the various pieces of our own subconscious finally rising to the surface. Now, I want you to know that I know the word dream does not appear in this passage. I know that. The subject of dreaming does not come up directly. And so I am mentioning dreaming this morning, not because of some magic interpretive trick, like, aha, it's actually in there. It's in John 1, 16 through 18. If you've read through this part of John many, many times, you say, I've never seen dreaming in there before. That's okay. All right, I'm not trying to pretend like the word itself is in there. I am mentioning dreaming this morning to help us understand what John is referring to when he says the law. The law was given through Moses. There is a system of performance and a system of receiving. And whenever we rely on the system of receiving, of performing before God instead of receiving, whenever we rely on trying to perform before God, you never quite measure up. And whether you have the honesty to admit it consciously or not, your subconscious knows it. Have you ever had the dream where you are, shall we say, less than fully attired in front of other people? Have you ever had that dream? Liars. Come on. Have you ever had the dream where you're not fully clothed and there are other people around? It's right up there with falling. Next to falling, not being fully clothed in public is one of the most common dreams that we have. You've had it. Most of us in this room have had it. What's going on? Most of our dreams are not prophetic. Isn't that fortunate? Most of our dreams are not telling us the future. Most of our dreams are our subconscious voices speaking to us. What's going on in that dream? You try your hardest to put on a front. You know there's something lacking with you. You try your hardest to give off the right appearance, to clothe yourself in what you have done. And even if consciously you can arrange all the data points in a way that would satisfy your own standard, somewhere deep down, you know you're not doing a good enough job. And so this dream comes, I'm afraid I'm going to be found out. I'm afraid I'm going to be exposed. I'm afraid I'm going to be found lacking. the system of trying to give off the right appearance, utterly afraid, appropriately so, that it will be found out that we've not actually done a good enough job. Got a dream. Now, it's not just clothing. Not long ago, I had a dream where I was in the woods during hunting season, and I had a gun, but not a license. And this dream happened before the stories we heard from Bob Kreider's grandsons at his funeral on Friday. I had a dream where I was in the woods, I had the gun, but I had no license. Brent Hay was with me. We came across this huge herd of deer. We saw a couple of 4 and 6 point bucks walk past us. Brent was trying to egg me on to shoot them. And I looked at Brent and I said, "Brent, a herd this big, there's got to be a massive one out there." And no sooner had I said that than this buck, can you picture Bambi's dad? Do you remember Bambi's dad in the Disney movie? This enormous buck rises up out of the grass, 12 to 16 points minimum. He takes off running, and I turn and shoot. I can't tell you, I don't have real life hunting stories to tell you, so I'll tell you dreams. I turn and shoot, and I hit it. And we track this deer. I had been hesitant about whether or not to pull the trigger. Brent was the one egging me on, saying, do it, and it's not Brent's fault, okay? Remember, most of the things in our dreams are representations of our own subconscious. So it's that I had, there's this inner battle within me. Should I or shouldn't I? Part of me thinks I should, part of me thinks I shouldn't. My mom was once mad at my dad for half of a day, and my dad could not figure out why. When he finally asked her, he said, I don't know what I did. She went on to tell him it was something he had done in a dream to her the night before. He says, "Not my fault. There's nothing I could do about that." You don't want to be on my mom's bad side. It was not Brent's fault. It was my own voice expressing itself through Brent. Should I or shouldn't I take the shot? I do. I hit it. We track the deer. And as we were coming up to the deer, a third person comes up behind us, an unknown man. And he simply begins to ask questions. Who shot the deer? Where were you when you shot it? And I can't take credit for it because I have no license. This is like that silly old joke about the pastor who skips church to go golfing on a Sunday. God gives him a hole in one and he can't tell anybody about it because he skipped church. Right? It's like that, only worse. In a dream, I go from where I can't even, not only can I not tell him, can I not own up that I shot this massive trophy buck, but I end up actually by the end of the dream in fear that they're going to find me and throw me in jail. And not only am I going to go to jail, but I'm going to have my entire career stripped from me, because who's going to follow a spiritual leader who doesn't even abide by the laws of the land? What's going on in a dream like that? It's blatantly transparent once you see it all at the end. I have a heart desire to do something great, to do something impressive, to do something that will wow. I finally do it. And the voice of accusation comes, but you didn't do it well enough. You didn't do it good enough. There was some imperfection. There was something lacking in the very way you went about it. You're actually going to lose everything in as much as what you were trying to rely on, what you were going to do. Do you know what it is to live by performance? The law was given. The law was given. The law was given. Do you know what it is to live by law? You try to measure up, you do your best, and still the voice comes, found wanting, insufficient. Take it all away, remove it. Do you know what it is to try to rely on your own performance before God? You try to live by the law, it'll never get you where you're trying to go. That is what John is getting after. When he says the law was given through Moses. The law was given, and like a tidal wave lifting a boat off of a sandbar, John describes for us something better. When a boat is stuck on a reef or on a sandbar, the men can go and row as much as they want. That boat's not going anywhere. But when the tidal wave comes in and lifts the boat, the men continue their rowing, but now they are not working on their own. They are working in harmony with a power greater than their own effort. And that boat is dislodged and begins to move. John gives us the tidal wave of grace. The law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. This is the gospel. Grace and truth. Now that phrase, grace and truth, picks up on a line from chapter 1, verse 14. We're going to get to that in 2 weeks. In between 14 and 16 is this line about John the Baptist. He is tearing the prologue. We're going to get to that line next week. The Word became flesh, 1:14, the Word became flesh, came from the Father, full of grace and truth. From the fullness of His grace, we have all received one blessing after another, for the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. He's picking up on verse 14. Given, Moses gave something external to him, and he gave it, came, it was not separable from Christ, but rather it appeared as Christ appeared, not separable from Christ. And look what John says about this. Verse 18. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. Now that phrase, at the Father's side, can also be translated in the bosom of the Father. It is a picture of intimacy. It is a picture of closeness, and it is a picture of rest. Of resting an end to your working, an end to your trying to earn. In the bosom is the same phrase that is used of Lazarus being in Abraham's bosom in the parable in Luke 16. It is the same phrase that is used for John the disciple reclining at Jesus' bosom at the Last Supper in chapter 13 of this book. Reclining in the bosom of, it is a picture of divine, eternal, intimate rest. In contrast to all of our striving under the law, Jesus came to offer us the rest He had known from all eternity. A.B. Simpson was the man who had founded the Christian Missionary Alliance, and he said, "True peace is nothing less than the deep divine tranquility of His own eternal calm." Have you been slaving? Have you been striving, trying to perform? Have you been hearing the accusations? Enter His rest, His calm, the bosom of the Father. Your efforts can never attain this. What we try to rely on our own hearts can never attain this. In Romans chapter 9, Paul speaks of those who were not pursuing the law, stumbling upon righteousness by faith, obtaining righteousness, but those who were seeking the law of righteousness could never attain it. And the difference between those two words, obtain and attain, the difference between those two words is the difference between the law and grace. That's the gospel. Obtain versus attain. Obtain, you don't earn it, you just happen to get it. You're walking through the woods, walking through a field, and you stumble upon a treasure chest or a massive buck. You stumble upon something, or a stranger appears to you and gives it to you. You receive it, you have obtained it, but you've never earned it. You did not attain it. Attain is the system where you try and try, you do your best to get it. It's the difference between receiving versus achieving. This is the gospel. The difference between obtain and attain. This is how we set our hearts at rest in His presence. How we set our hearts at rest whenever our hearts condemn us. Whenever the accusations come. For God is greater than our hearts. This grace is like an elevated railway zipping along above the thoroughfares while everybody else muddles through the traffic lights. It's like a great subterranean subway going through the deepest excavations of our heart while everyone else slogs through all of the intersections. This grace is like the sun that melts an iceberg and makes it a cloud. Picture a glacier. Picture a giant iceberg. How much human effort, ingenuity it would take to raise that iceberg up to the skies. How much strength it would take. But let the sun come and do its work. And melt that ice, change it, soften it, transform it, and it will be born above. It's a totally different power. He came to give you rest through a power your striving will never produce. When New York City was beginning to sprawl, over 100 years ago, as New York City began to grow and expand with the arrival, the emergence of the railroad stations, areas that were once very poor tenements, poor houses, suddenly became quite valuable pieces of property. A.B. Simpson wrote this during that time, and for those who are aware and interested, this would predate C.S. Lewis's similar analogy about the cottage and the palace by about half a century. A.B. Simpson wrote this. In the upper portion of New York City, many citizens may have often noticed a great number of miserable shanties standing now on the choicest of sites. Though perhaps on the corner of a splendid new avenue or looking out on a magnificent prospect, the house was now utterly unworthy of the site, just a shanty. Suppose that a millionaire should want to purchase this site and that the owner should begin before giving possession of the tenement to the millionaire. Suppose the owner should try to repair that old shanty for the new owner. Put some fresh thatch on the miserable roof and a new coat of whitewash on the dirty walls. How the purchaser would laugh at him and would say, "My friend, I do not want your miserable old wreck of a tenement fixed up like that. At the best, it will only be a shanty when you have done all you can, and I will never live in that. All I want is the ground, the site. And when I get it, I will raise that old heap of rubbish to the foundations and dig deep down to the solid rock before I will build my splendid mansion. I will then build the base from my own new house according to my magnificent plan. I do not want a vestige of your house. All I require is your location. Let him tear it down. All he needs is your heart. All he needs is the sight. Stop trying to fix it up. Stop trying to thatch your roofs spiritually. Let him raise it to the ground and build something entirely new. And the way he will, the way you can have that last is when you see. Is by seeing. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, has made him known. You know, one of the great problems, the great problem for the human race is that we cannot see God. We cannot see the one we need. On the one hand, it's a physical problem. How will our physical eyes take in infinite spirit? It's a physical problem. It's also something much deeper than that, even greater than that. It's a spiritual problem. It's a sin problem. How can our sinful eyes, our sinful minds and hearts, take in infinite, pure holiness without being consumed? We can't see God, lest we be utterly undone ourselves. In the Old Testament, Isaiah saw but a glimpse of God, just the hem of his robe, the train of his robe, and just a glimpse, and Isaiah said, "Woe to me, I'm undone." Even Moses, in those passages that talk about Moses seeing God face to face compared with the rest of the Israelites, not using a mediator to interact with God, but seeing him directly compared to everybody else, even those passages are careful to qualify the experience that Moses had. Moses saw but the form of the Lord. He was hid in the cleft of the rock and had to be hid till the glory of the Lord in full passed by. And then he saw the back of the Lord, as it were. Sinful man cannot see God without being destroyed. And here, John says, but God, the one and only, has made him known. Trinitarian language, once again, paralleling the first part of the chapter. God himself with God, Trinitarian language, God himself, yet with God, now in the flesh, making the unseeable God known. And perhaps I should say knowing or believing, perhaps that would be better terminology. We do live in the age where we don't see Christ physically with our own eyes. So perhaps knowing or believing might be better, but I'm sticking with seeing to bring out the scandal of Christmas, the scandal of the incarnation, and the scandal of the cross. How did Christ make it possible for you to see God? Jesus Christ comes in the flesh, he goes to the cross, and he says, and I'm paraphrasing, he goes to the cross and he says, "Dad, where are you? Where are you?" The darkness settles. He does not see his Father. The one who is in the bosom of the Father from all eternity was cast out, was exposed, went into utter darkness, lost his access, gave it up, gave up that infinite divine rest and calm to give it to you. At that cross, he says, "It is finished. The work you're striving is at an end." He gave up. He left that place of being in the bosom to bring you into it. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, has made him known. And we know that when we see him, we shall be like him, for we shall see him face to face. Revelation 21, we will have his name on our foreheads. We will see him face to face. Have you known this rest through believing, through seeing the Son of God, crucified, resurrected, ascended, the fullness of grace for you? Let's pray together. Lord, your word says elsewhere, when the time had fully come, God sent his Son, born of a woman, born under law, to redeem those under law, that we might receive full rights of sons. Help us to recognize what goes on in our own hearts. Help us to discern the accusations for what they are, and allow them to lead us, to cause us to run to your very presence, your completed work, that we might lay down our striving and enter your rest. Give us your grace to this end, I pray. Amen. Fear not, tidings of comfort and joy. Recognize your sin. Repent, believe in the death and resurrection of the Son of God, he will give you rest. If you are new, visiting with us, I'd love to chat with you at the back following the service. For those who may be new at 11 o'clock, you can simply make your way downstairs, and I'd love to talk with you there. This week, let us go and live in his rest. God bless you.